What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Hey everybody, welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. Thanks for checking us out. I know you got a million options out there, so I'm flattered and humbled that you would invest your time to listen to this show. And speaking of that, if you like it, you can spread it. Share the podcast to your friends and family on social media. For some reason, we're big in Australia and Hong Kong. And I think maybe it has something to do with the fact that those are countries that are experiencing, you know, a bit of authoritarian rule. Australia, best people in the world, shittiest government in the world, though. I mean, they're just really, they're out of their minds when it comes to just, it's almost like they're showing off for the queen, you know, like, hey, look how authoritarian we can be. And we're going to shut down this and we're going to silence that. And we're going to just be a bunch of pricks. And yeah, Australia, you guys, I'm glad you're listening to the show. You need it. I think maybe you just like to have, you know, you have that thing in common where I'm railing against the government and all of the inadequacies that we experience because of government. And then you're in Australia or you're in Hong Kong and you're nodding your head going, yeah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. In Hong Kong. Ooh, love Hong Kong. Probably my favorite big city in the world. You can get a suit in Kowloon for couple hundred bucks, or you can go have cocktails with your buddies and in Lan Kwai Fong or wherever. And I just love it. It's a great place. So, hey, wherever you are in the world, thanks for checking us out and spread the word. Because this episode, we are going to talk about lies and critical thinking. And lies are plentiful out there in the world. Critical thinking, yeah, kind of becoming an endangered species. It's tough. Thinking's hard. Thinking can be hard. And we live in a world of nonstop lies. And I think that there's a fair amount of people out there that recognize this and just get tired of trying to sift through what is truth and what is fiction and who's telling you something that's accurate and who's telling you something that's bullshit and what their agendas are. It's a full-time job, to be honest with you, just going through and trying to sift through the lies. It's tough. Clearly, I've identified some components of this octopus structure that are, you know, that should never be trusted, like the mainstream media and the official narrative of any government. You're just better off just by default just assuming that everything they tell you is a lie. And when you read books like George Orwell, you know, like 1984 or Animal Farm, you know, things like, especially 1984, what you get is, you get a look at the mechanisms behind the lies. You understand that, you know, that it's not that the government just can't, you know, just makes mistakes. It's that they actively engage in pre-planned lies as a stated course of business. That's how they get you to do what they want you to do. They tell you everything is going to be fine, and then it's not. Or they tell you they're going to do something, and then they don't. Whether it's a politician saying, when I become president, I'm going to close Guantanamo Bay on day one. Oh, really, Barack Obama? How'd that work out? You had 8 years. You didn't do it. You expanded it. Oh, when I'm president, I'm going to end these foreign occupations and these wars. Oh, bullshit. You are not. You're going to expand them, just like Obama did, from two wars to seven wars. You know, you name it. I mean, every politician is lying to you. They just have to. They're trying to make everybody happy, and that's an impossible task. So they're going to go about lying. And when you hear things, like if you read certain clips from 1984, you know, it's supposed to be fiction, but it's not, unfortunately. It's turned into more of like a documentary than anything. And here's a good clip from 1984. And if all others accepted the lie which the party imposed, if all records told the same tale, then the lie passed into history and became truth. Who controls the past, ran the party slogan, controls the future. Who controls the present, controls the past. I think maybe a lot of you recognize that as a line from Rage Against the Machine. You know, they use that, but so what is it? What's the biggest lies that we've been told? You know, it's a pretty straightforward question, but it's kind of difficult to answer. So I guess the first thing to do would be to clarify, what do we mean by the biggest? Are we talking about the longest running lie or the most impactful lie? You know, a lie might seem big to some people, but it might not seem like that big of a deal to others. So it just depends, right? We know that lying's bad. We can, you know, we know that, but we can also agree there's different degrees of lies. In fact, some lies we tell to protect people that we love, you know, and that is called a noble lie. And we're all guilty of this. And sometimes you just don't want to hurt somebody's feelings by telling them what you really think. So you tell a little lie. And that is, you know, on this scale, that's way at the bottom in terms of, you know, destructive force. You've got, you know, remember Chris Rock? Men lie the most, women tell the biggest lies. A man's lie is, I was at Kevin's house. A woman's lie is, it's your baby. You know, so we've got to allow a little bit of flexibility if the lie is necessary in order for something great to come out of it, you know, or if you're trying to protect somebody's feelings, or if you're lying to someone about where we're going for dinner because it's a big surprise and you get a birthday party, you know, a surprise party, so whatever. There's a million reasons that you could actually lie. But I don't think we're talking about these harmless lies, the white lies. Why it got to be a white lie? But, you know, we're talking about government lies, and we're talking about media lies. We're talking about important lies. And somebody that I, you know, I mean, in the world that I'm in, somebody that I know that would know a little something about lies, especially governmental lies, is John Kiriakou. He's a former CIA terrorism director in Pakistan. And he, you know, he, if, I mean, listen, this guy knows a good lie, and he also, doesn't have a problem sort of outing people. He's a very well-respected and experienced CIA agent that was, hung out to dry by people within the agency when he had the balls to go public in 2007 about Bush Cheney and the CIA torture program. So what he said was, everything the CIA has told us about this program from the beginning has been a lie. The CIA said they weren't torturing prisoners. That was a lie. The CIA said they weren't sending people to third world countries to undergo torture. That was a lie. The CIA said they were not sending people to secret prisons around the world. That was a lie. John Brennan, CIA director, said he did not have his employees spy on Senate investigators. That was a lie. My question is, why should we believe anything John Brennan says when everything that he has told the American people has been a lie? I would piggyback on that and say that Mike Pompeo, current director of the CIA, has said in front of the troops at West Point that, you know, when I was CIA director, well, actually, he's not CIA director anymore. He's Secretary of State. But at the time, he was CIA director. And he said, when I was CIA director, they told us to, you know, we had whole classes on lie, cheat, and steal. And he was bringing that up because the West Point motto was something about, you know, don't lie, cheat, or steal. And he's talking about how when he was at the CIA, they had classes on how to lie, cheat, and steal. Yeah, no shit. Yeah, why would anybody believe a single word Mike Pompeo says, or John Brennan, or insert any former or future CIA director in that statement there? Why? Of course not. Yeah, look, John Kiriakou went to prison for talking about this torture program. He did a couple years in prison. He had to sit. He talked about how when he got to prison, like, you know, the first couple days he was there, at lunch he had to go sit with the Aryan Brotherhood so that he didn't get his ass kicked. You know, he had to like click up with somebody. So I mean, this is a dude who did some time. And what did he do time for? He did time for disclosing classified information, but the classified information that he talked about had to do with the CIA's torture program, which, by the way, he was exposing, and he was talking about it truthfully. But we can't have that. You know, it happens to people that start telling the truth in positions of power in the government, they just go straight to prison. Whether you're, you know, Julian Assange or Chelsea Manning or John Kiriakou or you name it. I mean, that's what they love to do. So, you know, but this torture program, God, it's funny because you think back on it. And I remember they were adamant that we were not torturing people. And I remember thinking, you know, I hope we're not, because that's just such a reprehensible thing to do. And I like to think that we're a little bit better than that. I was fairly early on in my awakening process before I realized we're not any better than that. But at the time, I remember thinking, we're better than that. We don't need to torture people. But something inside me said, you know, but we're probably doing it. And of course, we were doing it. Not you and me, but these assholes at the CIA. In fact, Jesse Ventura is funny. He said, you know how Dick Cheney came out and said, well, it's enhanced interrogation, it's not torture or anything. And Jesse Ventura's response was, you give me a waterboard, Dick Cheney, in 1 hour, and I'll have him confess to the Sharon Tate murders. So he's been waterboarded. And Jesse Ventura, by the way, says that he has been waterboarded before when he went through BUDS. They had a component of that through the Navy SEALs program where they were waterboarded just so that they would know what it felt like. And he said, it feels like drowning. So that's torture. And we do that. And then we lie about it. We lie about everything. And the people that expose the lies get the book thrown at them. Daniel Ellsberg, government whistleblower, he knows a thing or two about that. His quote is, look, all administrations, all governments lie, all officials lie, and nothing they say is to be believed. That's a pretty good rule. Yeah. Well, what about some of the, you know, some well-known lies? I got a list of them. These will make you laugh, because when they said it, you wanted to believe it, but now you laugh at the fact that it's so absurd that you would ever believe anything like this. As an example, if you like the healthcare plan you have, you can keep it. Barack Obama. Oh, really? Is that what you can do? Because that shit didn't happen. We found the weapons of mass destructions in Iraq. We found biological laboratories. George W. Bush. No, you didn't, you big fat liar. You did not. You didn't find any of that stuff. Simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us. Dick Cheney, August 26, 2002. There is no doubt that you are a tremendous asshole, Dick. That I'm positive of. Cigarette smoking is no more addictive than coffee, tea, or Twinkies. This is James Johnson, former CEO of RJR Nabisco back in 1994. You know what? Someone needs to put this guy in a closet and force him to smoke the entire pack before coming out, just like parents did. It's not addictive. Fuck you. In spite of the wildly speculative and false stories of arms for hostages and alleged ransom payments, we did not, repeat, did not trade weapons or anything else for hostages, nor will we. Ronald Reagan, 1986. You are lying. Repeat, you are lying. I can say categorically that no one in the White House staff, no one in this administration presently employed, was involved in this very bizarre incident. Richard Nixon. Yeah, right. Okay. We are not about to send American boys 9 or 10,000 miles away from home to do what Asian boys ought to be doing for themselves. Lyndon Johnson. Yeah, I mean, this guy, first of all, he's lying. And second of all, this decision literally killed hundreds of thousands of people. And for what? To stop the domino from falling with communism in Southeast Asia? Stop. You know, these lies, they matter. You know, when powerful people tell them, they matter. Because a lot of people believe Lyndon Johnson when he said that they weren't going to send, you know, U.S. troops to Vietnam. He made that statement in 1964, but he did anyway. So, I will promise you this, that if we have not gotten our troops out by the time I am president, it is the first thing I will do. I will get your troops home. We will bring an end to this war. You can take that to the bank, candidate Barack Obama, 2007. Which bank would you like us to take it to? The reckless ones that blew up the economy, labeled themselves too big to fail, and took trillions of dollars of TARP money, or the banks that pled guilty for rigging Forex market and are under investigation for rigging LIBOR? Which bank would you want us to take it to, Barack? You pathological liar. Read my lips. No nude taxes. George H.W. Bush. Read my lips. You are a crazy person. I am not a crook, Richard Nixon. I did not have sexual relations with that woman. Of course you did. You had sexual relations with a ton of women, and then your wife helped to cover it up. That's who you are, Bill. The fundamentals of the economy are strong. John McCain. Dude, you actually thought Sarah Palin would be a good choice for your running mate. So what do you know about anything, John McCain, as you're running weapons through Libya, as you're singing your brains out in Vietnam? You know, they called him the songbird. Nobody liked the people that were in Vietnam and knew John McCain. They fucking hated him. They did not consider him to be an American hero. They considered him to be a traitor. You can watch a video, a really screwy video of, I don't know exactly. It was something congressional. I want to say it was the House Armed Service Committee meeting where they were taking a vote about something related to Vietnam going back. It had to do with POWs. And first of all, the place was empty. And right when they went to take the vote, John McCain and John Kerry both stood up and walked out and would turn their microphones off, got up and walked out and wouldn't vote on it. Those two guys are a bunch of fucking assholes. I'm telling you right now, both of those guys had huge problems and really sketchy stories about their service in Vietnam. So, and look, I'm not someone that says, well, you got to be on the front lines to have served in Vietnam. But I don't think what those guys were doing was serving at all. This one lie. This is more of a recent one. I responded in what I thought was the most truthful or least untruthful manner. James Clapper. Do you remember that? He's the director of the NSA who lied to Congress about the NSA's ongoing collection of citizens' email, phone records, and other personal data. This dude, he was he was like super fidgety and he was scratching his head a lot. I mean, he had this guy, James Clapper. I'll tell you what, if you ever wind up in Las Vegas at a poker, in a poker game against James Clapper, oh, you can take him to the cleaners because he is a horrible liar and he has a ton of tells, including scratching his head and couldn't look at anybody. So yeah, you definitely want to get into a game against that guy. But you know, this is what you get when you put psychopaths in position of power. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in politics. I mean, Lance Armstrong, a very talented athlete, an amazing athlete, is a sociopath. I mean, flat out. This is what he said. This is testimony back in 2005. He's on the record in the video interrogation during this court proceeding, said he, this is what he said: how could it have taken place when I have never taken performance enhancing drugs? How could that have happened? How many times do I have to say it? Well, if I can't be any clearer than I've never taken drugs, then incidents like that to happen, how clear is that? This is him just like berating the attorneys that are questioning him. Dude, you were lying the whole time, and now everybody knows it. I think a lot of people knew it while it was happening, but probably still didn't want to believe it. But think about Lance Armstrong for a second. How, if you get the right personality type, and by right personality type, I actually mean wrong personality type, but you get a guy like Lance Armstrong with all the athletic gifts, who is a type A personality, a undeniable sociopath, a real asshole on top of all of that, by all accounts, and I know people that know him, a pretty reprehensible guy. And then, I don't really love this term bully, but he was over the top. You know, he's one of those guys in poker, if we want to put this again in poker terms, you know, when you raise, he's the guy that just pushes, goes, I'm all in every time. He just comes right over the top to try and intimidate you, whether you're another cyclist, whether you're someone from WADA who's investigating him, or whether you're a journalist, or whether you're, you know, just a regular person. You know, he comes over the top with these lies to, you know, cause you to sort of back up a little bit and back down, like, oh, you couldn't be that bold if you weren't telling the truth. So it's an interesting study in this. And there's also a concept called duping delight, which is it's the pleasure that a liar gets from having someone else under their control and being able to manipulate them and telling a really big lie. And watching these people swallow it, and you get a little smile. That's the Robbie Parker, you know him from the school in Connecticut incident that we cannot mention. You know, you ready for me to go? As he strolls up to the microphone, looks back, gives a little laugh. My name is Robbie Parker. That's duping delight. That's somebody lying in front of a camera, super excited. Because he's just about to spin. He's just about to be famous. He's just about to concoct a huge lie. He's just about to have a ton of sympathy for him. And that guy is fucking lying, by the way. I'm sorry if you guys are appalled by that statement or you think I'm being disrespectful. I know a little bit about this guy. Dig into it. I've got a whole chapter in my book about this, about who this guy is and what he's doing. That's part of it. So the duping delight, you'll get that from time to time. If you're watching somebody who is next time this happens a lot in these staged events, these stage shootings or these drills that go live, or you know what I mean? These events that are not as they appear to be. Next time you're watching one on, say, like your nightly news, keep an eye out for that. Just in the back of your mind, just look and see if you see any of these people that are supposed to be currently experiencing the worst day of their life. See if you see them smile. Give a little laugh. Give a little grin. You know, something like that. You'll be surprised how many times you see it. And when you see it, that's your indicator. That's your, you're not going to, in event, I think a lot of people that talk about like false flags and these staged events, they somehow, you know, the people that are skeptical that these are staged events, they like, they're expecting the guy to go, "Ah, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it was really a staged event." Like, they're never going to admit it. You know what I mean? If you're waiting for someone to come forward and confess to it, like a guy, like a Robbie Parker or something, you'll be waiting forever. It's going to be up to you. You're going to have to read the nonverbal cues. And duping delight is one of them. It's something that you see with psychotic liars. I don't know that Robbie Parker is a psychopath. I think he's just a shitty crisis actor. But I do think that a lot of the people that have a lot of comfort with the media, guys like Donald Rumsfeld, he's a straight up psychopath, cold-blooded motherfucker. And he will stand in front of that microphone in that podium, and he will smile, and he will tell a great story, and he'll talk about how everything's going to be fine and how, you know, mistakes have been made, and, you know, we've opened investigations, we're looking into it, trying to get to the bottom of all this stuff, with just the, as cool as he can be. Obama was like that too. Obama, it was very, very comfortable telling lies. And you only get comfortable telling lies a couple of ways. Either you have a lot of practice doing it, which I would say these guys do, or you're an empathy deficient psychopath, like someone like Barack Obama or Bill Clinton is a good one. Donald Trump is mentally unwell, I think. I said that's not even taking his politics into account. He's a narcissist, you know. So you, all these little behavioral quirks that they have, it makes some people better at lying than others. Some that don't have any sort of fear. Well, first of all, you could be a better liar when you know that nothing's going to happen to you. If somebody catches you, you can tell a lie pretty calmly and coolly because you are not worried about the repercussions, as opposed to somebody that's in a police interrogation room and you've got two cops, you know, leaning forward in their chair and they're saying, "You're looking at life in prison, start telling me the truth." And then that guy starts to try and lie, the wheels come off. It's pretty obvious that the guy's bullshitting. But somebody like Rumsfeld, he knows nothing's going to happen to him. He might get a pie in the face like Bill Gates did. But for the most part, he's not going to prison. He knows that. He's got the goods on other people. It's never going to happen. But these guys have a lot of practice. So it's interesting to watch politicians do the lies. And you know, it's H.L. Mencken, American journalist, quote machine extraordinaire. He said, "The men the American people admire most extravagantly are the most daring liars. The men they detest most violently are those who try to tell them the truth." So, and of course, the greatest stand-up philosopher of all time, George Carlin, once said, and I think he's right, "If honesty were suddenly introduced into American life, the whole system would collapse." Yeah, he's right about that. So let's take one story and let's examine some of the lies from one story. And you know, and the story that we're going to talk about is 9/11, and this is not meant to be a full list of all the lies, but when you're talking to your friends and they're about 9/11, let's say you've got a friend who is, who just has never really given it much thought. So by default, he believes the official narrative, 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters overpowered, you know, the flight crew and flew these planes into World Trade Center 1, World Trade Center 2, the Pentagon in Shanksville. Let's say that's the official story. And you say, You know, 9/11 was a total inside job, and the whole narrative of 9/11 is full of holes. And they say to you, oh, yeah? It's so full of lies. What are the lies? Well, you can bookmark this episode, go back to this point in it, and then you can feel free to rattle off this list of lies. This is just the official story of 9/11, okay? And there are so many lies involved in it. And like I said, it's not meant to be a detailed list, but it's a long one. So let's start with, and this is in no particular order, the lie about World Trade Center 7 announcing the collapse before it happened. That's a problem. They lied about what caused Building 7 to collapse. They lied about Building 7 collapsing at free fall speed. They lied about a plane hitting the Pentagon. The plane didn't hit the Pentagon. There's no plane parts there. The hole's too small. It was hit by a missile. They lied about what actually hit the Pentagon. They lied about Flight 93 crashing in Shanksville. They lied about it crashing so hard that it buried itself. They lied about finding bodies in the wreckage of Shanksville. They did not. They lied about the let's roll fallacy. You know, how the guy stood up in Flight 93 and said, let's roll. And then they busted down the doors and tackled the height. That's the Nariah story of 9/11. That's the, they took the babies out of the incubator story. I'm sorry. It sounds good. Flight 93, let's roll. All that stuff. They made a movie about it. Sounds great. Didn't happen. They lied about who the hijackers were. They lied about their ability to fly planes, any planes, not just 737s, okay? These guys couldn't fly Cessnas. They lied about who financed the hijackers. They lied about finding a hijacker's passport in the World Trade Center rubble. They lied about finding a hijacker's driver's license in Shanksville. They lied about box cutters. They lied about explosions in the basement of World Trade Center 1 and 2. They said it didn't happen. You can hear it on videos. You can hear the explosions. It most definitely happened. You've got hundreds of eyewitnesses saying that there were explosions in the basement before the planes hit. You can hear that there are explosions in the basement after the planes hit. They lied about why the Twin Towers came down. They lied about jet fuel not being hot enough to melt steel. They lied about support columns with angled cuts from demo charges. That's a tough one to explain, by the way. They lied about the use of thermite and nanothermite. And about molten steel in the basements of World Trade Center 1 and 2. Weeks later. Months later, actually. They lied about the drills that they were running simulating the actual events. They lied about the arresting of the dancing Israelis. They lied about Osama bin Laden being responsible for 9/11. And for that matter, bin Laden being killed in Pakistan. Or hiding in Tora Bora and all that stuff. They lied about his actual death, when he really died. They lied about dumping his body in the ocean. They lied about how Pat Tillman died. They lied about how Jessica Lynch was captured. They lied by omission about the relationship between the Bushes and the bin Laden families, tried to pretend like they didn't really have a close relationship, which means they also lied about the fact that George H.W. Bush and bin Laden family was having a meeting in Washington, D.C. on the morning of 9/11 itself. What a coincidence. They lied about who was responsible for 9/11. Then they lied about why America was invading Afghanistan and Iraq. They lied about how long the war would last. They lied about how long it would cost. They lied about how many troops would be deployed. And they lied about how many times the troops would be deployed. They never had any intention to provide care for injured troops. They bullshitted us about the number of suicide deaths of American soldiers. They pretended like they didn't use depleted uranium in Iraq. They lied to us about not protecting the poppy fields in Afghanistan. It's exactly what they were doing there. Of course, we already mentioned this, but they lied about waterboarding. then admitted it, but then said it wasn't torture. They lied a lot about their intention to not use Guantanamo Bay prison. Then they lied about taking prisoners there. Then they admitted to it. Then they lied about charging the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay with crimes. And then they lied about their desire to close it during the 2008 Obama campaign. But then he went ahead and kept it open after all. They lied about the drone strikes in Iran or Iraq and Afghanistan, probably Iran too. And then continued their lie about expanding the drone strikes into Pakistan and Somalia, and then expanding them again into Yemen. And then lied to us all about by describing these as surgical and targeted and all those other buzzwords that they use. They lied about the percentage of civilians killed by them. Actually, it was 90%. 90% of the people killed in drone strikes were civilians. That is unacceptable. It's unacceptable on a lot of levels. They lied about yellowcake uranium. They lied about finding mobile missile tubes. They lied about mobile chemical weapon development. They lied about weapons of mass destruction. They lied about everything. They lied about everything. This is the American government for you, in a nutshell. Just a fucking list of lies. Just about one thing, 9/11 and what came from it, these wars that, and this is a very light list. Never believe anything until it's been officially denied. Claude Cockburn, journalist. Genius. It's true. I mean, so where do we go? Where do we go with the lies? Did we land on the moon? Did that actually happen? I mean, you know who's telling us we did? The United States government and NASA. Combined, they have about 0% credibility. It's hard to give them the benefit of the doubt, especially when it's something as important and seemingly impossible as landing a tin can on the moon on the first attempt. So the government and NASA and the media were responsible for selling that story. So was it a gigantic lie? I mean, I know how I feel about it. I think a lot of people still cling to the belief that it really happened. Well, we don't even have to get into any of the details of it. Just who's telling you that it happened? The mainstream media, which was being infiltrated by the CIA back then and still currently is, but especially in the late 60s, NASA, and the American government. Not exactly character witnesses, if you know what I mean. What about Oklahoma City? Was that a lie too? Well, they told us there was just one bomb in the Ryder truck, but you can watch news footage, videos of that time where they're talking about how they defused the second and third bomb and they were looking for additional bombs. So there's the lie right there. That's a big one. Who was involved in that event? FBI. Happened at the Murrow Federal Building. All the FBI agents were told to take the day off. They weren't there. That's convenient. I mean, that whole story is filled with holes. What about the Gulf of Tonkin incident that tilted the scale of public opinion for the Vietnam War? That event never happened. The North Vietnamese PT boat shooting at the American boat, it never happened. Declassified. You can look it up. It's, you know, it doesn't matter if it happened because the lies create reality. And you never find out about most of the lies until it's far too late. And they know that, of course. What are you going to do? Dig up Lyndon Johnson and kill him again? You know, it doesn't do any good. They bury this in government secrecy. Maybe it gets released 50 years from after the fact. at which point nobody's held accountable. Everybody's long gone. Damage has been done. Policies have been changed. Trillions have been spent. So we have to, you know, it doesn't do us any good to expose all these lies after the fact, decades after the fact. What we need to be doing is recognizing the lies when they're fresh, when we hear them, and saying, nope, we're not doing that. No, 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 no. Oh, Juan Guaido is going to be the new leader of Venezuela. And Maduro was killing his people and starving them and doing all that. Stop it. Stop lying to us. This is what the CIA does when they want to overthrow a leader. They put out a ton of lies and disinformation to sway public opinion. I mean, there's just, you know, history is littered with them doing this. So when you see something current like a Juan Guaido situation, you ought to be able to just reflexively just be like, bullshit, you know, just immediately call it, because they use the same playbook of, well, we're going to demonize the guy that's in office and say that he's oppressing his people and mistreating them. And we've got this new guy that we're going to support, and we like him. We're going to support him because he's going to come in. He's going to spread democracy, and he's going to bring humanitarian aid to these people and all these things. And it's all the same lie. It's the same structure every time. It's so easy to spot. I mean, in some cases, especially like in the case of Venezuela, you have some of the same swamp creatures making a return appearance using the same strategy that they used before. John Bolton, Elliot Abrams. These two guys are scumbags of epic proportions. Pathological liars. Unable to tell the truth if they wanted to. They couldn't tell you what they had for breakfast without lying to you about it. And they find themselves back in an administration that wants them to go be in charge of foreign policy. And it's crazy. We really are the problem. I mean, the United States government really is the problem around the world. I take no pleasure in saying that. As an American, I would really prefer to say, our country is out there helping others less fortunate. They're not. They're just looking for ways to fuck them over and steal all their resources. I hate saying that. I feel bad being associated with that in any way. Obviously, I'm not doing it. But this is what happens when you put maniacs in charge of foreign policy. You get maniacal decision making. You get things like, you know, pepper bombing Cambodia and Laos under cover to create chaos so that it can make your war go a little bit easier and you know, so that you can stop the spread of communism. It's like one lie on top of another lie on top of another lie. I mean, it's just, and of course the downside to all of this is that these lies, if it was just some guy at a party telling you, you know, how many girls he's screwing or how much money he's got. These are dumb lies. These are harmless lies. They don't mean anything. But when presidents and CIA directors lie to you about a certain event to try and get you to feel one way or the other about it, inevitably those lies translate into actual death and destruction. I mean, the Colin Powell sitting there holding up the little test tube saying, you know, the yellow cake uranium, that is a lie. He knew it was a lie, and a lot of people knew it was. I mean, some people I don't think at the time really understood that. And frankly, I don't think I did at the time, to be honest with you. In the lead up in 2003, I think I was still kind of blissfully ignorant to this situation. But it doesn't matter, because Colin Powell knew he was lying. And the people that told him to go up there and say that knew that he was lying. And then all of a sudden, it's like, yeah, we got to go do it. And then that decision from that point forward meant, yep, we've got congressional support. We're going. And then war starts. And what happens from that one lie? And I know that there was a series of lies that led up to it, but he was part of it. That decision then started a domino effect which put troops in motion. It got them overseas. And next thing you know, they're in Iraq. And then we're bombing the shit out of people. And people are dying. And kids are being born deformed in Iraq because we used depleted uranium on the city of Fallujah, which is a war crime. And it is unforgivable for us to have done that. And now you have babies being born with like heads four times the size of a normal head. It's awful. So we've got a sliding scale of lies. Some are more important than others, but God damn it. The people in your military and the people that are in your government that stand up there and tell those lies, they don't give a shit about the people that it hurts. It's awful. And the media, they're complicit if for no other reason than they're so fucking ignorant and stupid that they don't know any better. I think most of them know better, but a lot of the guys that you see in your nightly news in the media are really not very bright. Wolf Blitzer, as an example. I got a quote from you for Wolf. When I finished grad school, I sort of fell into journalism. Someone mentioned that there was an entry-level job at the Reuters news agency. I applied, and to my amazement, I got the job. Wolf Blitzer, CNN. We're all very happy for you, Wolf. Now go home and get your fucking shine box. But we have a responsibility in this game. We have a responsibility to be aware that we may be getting lied to by people on your news or people in government, people, you know, that you interact with. Critical thinking is a lost art. We have outsourced our critical thinking to the people that we see on television, to the politicians, to the actors who become activists and give their Golden Globe speeches and talk about how we have to save this and do that and climate change and all this stuff. And we're like, oh yeah, that's awesome, man. I fucking love, Joaquin Phoenix. Yeah. I want to listen to him talk about all this stuff. Dude, stop, you know, think about it yourself. Use your own brain for this. Stop, you know, following what actors are. Stop. Don't even listen to me. Like, you know, think for yourself. Maybe what I'll say something that'll get you kickstarted on this. But in the end, double check everything I say. Don't just take it as truth. I mean, I'm not lying to you guys, but I don't expect you to just believe me by default. Critical thinking is important. Teach your kids that. My God. You know, the thing is with our education system is that we get in this, we reward students for regurgitating information. Teacher says something, student has to remember it or write it down. And then when the test comes, they have to regurgitate that information. If they do that well, then they get a high grade. If you get a high grade, then you can go to college. The higher your grade, the better your college and all these things. And so you go into high levels of education. And really what you've done is you've just proven that you are better than everybody else at telling the teacher what they want to hear. So it's really no surprise that some of these institutions like Harvard and Stanford and Yale, which are known to be some of the best institutions, you know, universities in the world, they develop so many people from these institutions that wind up going into politics and going into the mainstream media, because what they've shown is that they are high level regurgitators of information, that they'll do no critical thinking, or maybe they will, but they'll still give you the answer that you want. I had a huge problem doing this. I was a marketing major at USC, and I was in my advertising class, which was, you know, if you're a marketing major, got to do well in advertising, right? That's kind of your core thing. And I liked it. I liked the class a lot. And I took a midterm. And I remember coming back to my room after that, and my roommate said, hey, man, how'd your midterm go? And I said something to him that I've never said before or after. I said to him, I honestly don't think I got anything wrong on that test. Like, I felt like I got 100%. Now, I'm a C+ student. So for me to say, like, I thought I got 100% on the test was, was not common. Like I said, I've never said that before. I went to class the following, you know, it was like 2 days later when you had class. I get the results of my midterm and I got a 54% on it. And I'm looking at it. He gave back at the beginning of class and I'm just staring at this thing for like an hour and a half. And then class ends and I go down to talk to the teacher and I have my hands. I go, what happened to the teacher? And he goes, I was going to ask you the same thing. What happened? I go, what do you mean? What happened? I said, did you use the wrong answer key to grade this? And he just kind of laughed and he goes, no. I said, well, let's go through it. So we sat there and we went through my advertising midterm question by question. And all of the questions that I got wrong, I was able to explain how they were, how my answer was actually right. And at the end of that, my teacher said, listen to me. He goes, I can't give you a 54% because you know this stuff. I can't give you 100% either. He goes, but I'll tell you what, from this point on, I want you to do something for me. Give me the answer that you think I want. And I said, okay, I'll do that. And that's part of what they're looking for these days at these high level institutions. Give me the answer that I'm looking for. I had a problem doing that because I had my own answers to it. That doesn't fly. That doesn't translate well into tests. Luckily, I didn't get 54%. What he wound up doing, just in case you care, is he gave me a 0 out of 0. So he just threw the whole midterm out. It didn't count against me. But he instructed me to, get on board. So this is what I'm talking about. Critical thinking, your ability to process a question, think about it, examine it, and then give a correct answer. A guy named Steve Toltz, he wrote a book called A Fraction of the Whole. He said this, and I love this quote. He said, or about how when you're a child, to stop you from following the crowd, you're assaulted with the line, if everyone jumped off a bridge, would you? But when you're an adult, and to be different is suddenly a crime, people seem to be saying, hey, everyone else is jumping off a bridge. Why aren't you? That's really what we get into these days. I mean, I feel like I see that a lot, you know, with the crowd going one way. And if you don't immediately fall in line, they're like, what's wrong with you for having a different opinion? Part of this has to do with herd mentality, you know, following the herd and doing that. Part of it has to do with just flat out stupidity. And we've got some people in positions of power in the United States government that are at their core really dumb. Representative Hank Johnson, Georgia, Democrat. I'm not picking on Democrats necessarily, and I'm not picking on Georgia. I'm picking on Representative Hank Johnson, though. This guy is maybe the dumbest person in Congress. This is a quote he actually said out loud. I'm going to read the quote, and it'll be like Jeopardy. I'm going to read the answer, and you try and figure out what the question is. So I'm going to read the quote, and you try and figure out what he's actually talking about. And spoiler alert, you'll never figure it out. Because it's so fucking stupid that if you figure this out, then unfortunately you're equally as stupid as this guy to be able to go down this path. So anyway, here, this is what he said. My fear is that the whole island will become so overly populated that it will tip over and capsize. What is Representative Hank Johnson, Georgia Democrat, talking about? He is talking about the problem that could arise if too many people decide to move to the island of Guam. He's concerned that if it's too overpopulated, the island will tip over and capsize. I'm not kidding. I know I like to have fun in this podcast and joke around. I'm not kidding. This guy thinks that if you put too many people on one side of an island, it will flip over like a pool float or something. He's in Congress. This guy has a fucking job in Congress. He collects $180,000 a year to represent the people of Georgia in Congress. He thinks that islands tip over and flip over upside down. This is criminal stupidity. I mean, look, I'm no geologist, but I know that that's not how it works with islands, okay? Lawrence Peter, he wrote a book called The Peter Principle. Sometimes I wonder whether the world is being run by smart people who are putting us on or by imbeciles who really mean it. Oh, I think it's a combination of both. I think there are some really smart people that are running the world. Evil. I don't mean smart in a good way. But I think there's some smart people. And I think there are some really stupid people there as well. I mean, people that think that islands just tip over. If people cannot write well, they cannot think well. And if they cannot think well, others will do their thinking for them. George Orwell. That's where we are. That's where we are right now. Others are doing the thinking for us. Not all of us. I mean, if you're listening to this show, you're into alternative versions of history. You're into false flags. You're into government corruption. You're into shit talking. You're into all this stuff. You're probably, if not thinking for yourself, on the way towards thinking for yourself. Now, to be fair, none of us are truly original thinkers. We're all influenced by somebody. We take something from somebody and take something from somebody else, and we incorporate it into the way we view the world and we spit it out. So, but we are thinking about it. We are thinking about how things work. And I think most of us that are listening to this are thinking about how to change things. We're probably fairly well pissed off at the way this world has been laid out for us. And, you know, we have questions about not just the people that are running this world, but the people that are following orders too. It is, you know, there's a lot of dummies out there. As the great George Carlin said, think about how stupid the average person is, and then realize that half of them are stupider than that. This is a real dilemma that we face. We're surrounded by stupid people. I'm sorry, I know it sounds kind of like, I don't know, arrogant to say that. I don't even know if it's really arrogant. It's just like a statement of common fact. Like, there's a lot of really dumb people out there. We are surrounded by morons, and they drive, and they vote, and they reproduce like crazy. I mean, Mike Judge, you know, creator of Beavis and Butthead, and I heard an interview with him where he was talking about making the movie Idiocracy. I think that came out in, I want to say like 2002 or something. It's a while ago. And if you haven't seen the movie Idiocracy, go see it. It's really funny. But somebody asked him about the movie, about how the premise of the movie is that a guy winds up in a time capsule, falls asleep in a time capsule and wakes up 500 years from now. And in 500 years, when he comes out of the time capsule, he's the smartest guy in the world. And he had just been like a janitor back in his old life when he fell asleep in this time capsule. And he comes out and then he's asked to solve all the world's problems. And everybody is really, really dumb. And Mike Judge's response to that was, he said, "I didn't realize I was writing a documentary." And it's such a great line, because that's what we've become, you know? Albert Einstein said it. After hydrogen, the most common thing in the universe is stupidity. You know, we're joking about this, obviously. We're joking about stupid people and all this stuff. But we have a responsibility to educate ourselves. And I don't mean that necessarily that going to school means that you're educated, or getting a college degree. That doesn't mean that you're educated. It means you can follow the rules. It means that you can take classes. Shows you can set out on a path and stick to it and accomplish a goal. And so that obviously says some good things about you. But I don't want to confuse, going to school with necessarily being educated, but we have a responsibility to educate ourselves. Part of it is unlearning our history and then relearning a new version, a more accurate version of it. That's something that we always have to think about. We have to get better at decoding lies that we hear. We have to get better at recognizing people that are liars. Zbigniew Brzezinski, globalist scumbag of the highest order, once said, "Shortly, the public will be unable to reason or think for themselves. They'll only be able to parrot the information they've been given on the previous night's news." Well, we're there. He wrote that in the Global Chessboard, which he put out in like the 70s. We're here. The future's now. We can only parrot the information given to us on the previous night's news. That's unfortunately where we are. And that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if the previous night's news was telling us the truth. But we all know that's not happening. So that's what he's talking about. You know, you remember I think everybody's seen the Chris Rock special. I'm talking about, like, as soon as you get your GED, someone always has the nerve to say, now you can go to college. It's like, slow down. You know, it's obvious that high school was busting my ass. Yeah. Let's start with just acknowledging that we've got some big, big problems from the information sources that are dripped out to us, be it corporate mainstream news, government press briefings and things like that. Our history books are filled with lies. Our television commercials are all lies, either telling you to, you know, make you feel bad about yourself so you'll buy something, or telling you if you buy this product, then you'll be prettier, or, you know, all these things. I mean, it's just, we're just inundated with lies constantly. And someone like me that's a marketing major, my job, my major in college was to figure out a way to sell a product to someone in a way that makes them want it. And one component of that can be to lie to people. You know, not good. I don't feel good about that. So with anything that we're talking about, or we're any of these topics, you know, I'm pretty good at complaining about all these things, you know, and maybe I can do it in a way that's humorous or, you know, slightly entertaining. But I would prefer to not have to do that. I think that we have a responsibility to ourselves and to our family and our society and our planet. We need to be better about sifting through the lies, recognizing them right when we see it, and then cutting those people out of our lives, whether it be someone in your family that's a pathological liar, whether it's someone at the priest who's telling you about the glory of God and asking you for donations. Meanwhile, he's raping some boy in the back. You know, all of these hardcore pathological liars, we need to just shame the shit out of them until they are no longer a part of our community or our existence. Because for too long, we have become comfortable with the idea that all these people are lying to us, and we seem to be okay with it. It's like, well, that's just the cost of doing business. That's just what you have to deal with being a sentient human being in this, you know, in this world these days. You're going to get lied to. It's fine. Well, I don't know if we should accept that. Not from the people that are supposed to represent us, not from our nightly news that's supposed to, you know, inform us. We got to be better about that, but we have to take some responsibility ourselves for it. I'm always working on it. It's a work in progress. I hope you guys enjoy the show and you choose to share it with your friends and family. It means a lot to me if you do. We're out there trying to, just trying to wake people up, or maybe cause them to see things from a different angle. Hopefully it helps. You can connect with the show through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. And also there's links there for Facebook and Twitter and things like that. And if you like the book, The Octopus of Global Control, you can buy the paperback at either Amazon or Barnes & Noble. And you can buy the digital version there as well, or you can get it from my website. Just donate more than $10 to my PayPal account, and I'll send you a PDF version and an EPUB version that you can read and share with your friends and family. I love it when people take the book and give it to other people. It's the best. So you can support the show that way. I really do appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. Take care.